Hello, how's it going today? This is Remain in Light, Talking Heads. I am your host,
Dak. I'm Kippy.
And?
I'm Jared. I don't remember what my name is. Rush Jared. I do like Rush.
Rush Jared.
Weezer Jared.
Weezer Jared. Dude,
if
I was listening to music when Weezer was at the height of popularity, if I was not either born or 1 year old, I would have been a huge Weezer fan. I know that with 100% certainty.
Then Pinkerton would have dropped.
I probably would have hated it, and then I would have later on had a renaissance with it.
And then you would have heard El Scorcho. And then you would have... Dude.
Yeah, I think that might have been my jumping off point for that album, for the moment at least.
But we are talking about the classic Remain in Light by the Talking Heads.
1980 album.
Jared's favorites. This is actually going to be the last of the favorites. We are then going to move on to classics. You know, so we get more of on a, you know, monthly basis. We're going to do classics for the rest of this month. We're going to do something else for the next month, maybe. You know, that's how that's going to happen. And actually, today I am going to be reading you guys questions because of difficulties and with the everything and, you know.
Okay.
Let's get into the questions. Or Jared, what?
Tell us about the record.
Talking Heads are such a unique band in a lot of ways. They mix genres together.
Pretty seamlessly.
Yeah, pretty seamlessly. Very fluent. And this album in particular, I would not know how to accurately put its genre. I believe it was listed as like post-punk and new wave. Neither of which I think are 100% accurate. To paint a picture of this album, you'd have to list like six different genres.
This is what they said here. New wave, post-punk, world beat, dance rock, art pop, art rock, avant pop, several types of funk, specifically Afro-funk, psychedelic funk.
Yeah, I heard one that said like avant funk, and I was like, in a lot of ways, yeah. I just putting a label on their music is so hard.
These guys are incredibly influential, correct?
Yeah, I mean, just the way that they use music, the way they blended it together, the way they talk about issues, dude, mm-hmm. It's so good.
Mm-hmm. Would you like to roll into the questions?
Absolutely.
How did you feel about Born Under Punches?
That is the opening track.
The opening track.
I loved it. I think in a lot of ways it set the mood for the album very well.
It is one of my favorites on the album.
It's really good.
I really like Born Under Punches. How did you feel about the closer?
The Overload. Now this...
I liked it too.
Did you?
Like Born Under Punches?
I was reading on Genius where it was talking about the overall feeling of paranoia towards the government after Watergate.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which is... I mean, it definitely comes through in the lyrics.
Mm-hmm.
Just talking about being a government. Look at these hands. You can't kill... You can't drown, you can't burn a government man because it's a concept more than anything.
Right.
I love that.
Yes.
And I think one of the strengths of this album in general, and I'll talk about it on like a lot of the songs, where it's just like, it does have thoughtful kind of abstract ways of talking about social issues. So you are thinking the whole time, but they're all bops.
Right. I think they called it stream of consciousness lyrics. Something like that.
Oh, dude, yes. It's almost like spoken word in a lot of ways.
Absolutely.
There's one song, I think Seen and Not Seen, is like almost exactly just spoken word over a beat.
Absolutely.
But for the final song, The Overload, I think it's a good closer in that the overall arc of the album goes from kind of higher energy beats to very dreary, dreamy beats, and mm-hmm. this is almost like a nightmarish beat.
I wanted to change the name to Overlord.
Yes, I feel like...
Did it have that feel to you, yes. too?
Dude, when I listened to the album and it got to this song, I legit thought it like switched artists for a second.
Because
I was like, man, this is like...
Yes.
This is heavy.
Yeah.
Evidently, they made this song in an attempt to make a Joy Division song without ever actually listening to Joy Division. So the story goes is that they basically took all the descriptions of Joy Division from music press and then tried to make a song based around those descriptions.
Wow.
And from what I've heard, because I haven't actually listened to any Joy Division, they got it pretty spot on in a lot of ways.
I agree. I wouldn't have figured all that out on my own, but that's neat.
I think this is fantastic, though. Just mm-hmm. the speed of it is so slow and dark.
Mm-hmm.
And the lyrics, again, very abstract, but they carry an emotion so fluently. And I think that's true with all of their songs, but the darkness in this song is so prevalent in every single facet of it.
Mm.
The beat, the lyrics, the way the lyrics are delivered. Dude, it's awesome.
Yeah.
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 Correct. Yeah. What's the next question?
The next question is favorite and least favorite song.
For favorite, I do at least have to give a shout out to Once in a Lifetime. I really like that song well before I ever actually like listened to this album as a whole. It's probably their most popular song, right?
Easily.
Easily.
On
this album, 100%.
It says it's their third, though. It says, like, Psycho Killer and This Must Be the Place.
Yeah, I was going to say those two have at some point been more popular than Once in a Lifetime. Mm-hmm. But Once in a Lifetime is just, it's so dreamy and bubbly in a lot of ways. Again, when I'm talking about them putting emotions through their music, this song in so many ways does feel like you are just being lost in the passage of time. The whole idea of just waking up one day and just being like, how did I get here? What were the sequence of events? Because you so often get swept up in life that you don't question these things. And to have that sudden moment of awakening, it literally does feel like you are in a stream of water with all the water imagery. You are in this stream and you just suddenly wake up and realize that you are just being swept without pause towards an unknown future. I mean, it's fantastic, and I felt that way at points in my life, and it just accurately describes it. As for least favorite track, I don't think I can actually pick one. And I know that's kind of a cop-out answer, but I feel like every single one of these songs has an important spot on this album or talks about subject matter, which I find to be interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I might say The Great Curve because... I can't, though, at the same time, because I love the imagery in it. I love this, like... It's almost talking about a goddess that has, like, the world sitting on the curve of her hip.
Mm-hmm.
I find it to be just beautiful in so many ways, and just, again, you get swept up in it.
I really liked Cross-Eyed and Painless.
Yes.
I felt like it was weird when I'm looking through it and they say, well, he kind of was influenced by Curtis Blow's The Breaks right here on this, and it threw me off a little when I read that, but then as you listen, there is a rhythmical rant to it, and there's the content of the paranoid, alienated man in an urban world having trouble dealing with all that entails. I also find it interesting looking back on it, knowing what I know about David Byron now, where I've read quotes where he says how the gentrification of New York has pushed the pulse and the heartbeat out of the city to where you don't have artists that can live here anymore. And so you don't have, it's not a living, breathing art city anymore, and that kind of thing. And so you hear this and you go, wow, you know what I mean?
I mean, this album talks about so many social issues, and it does use, I think it's Afrobeat.
Well,
or like African polyrhythms, I heard someone say that. I don't exactly know what that means, but you do hear the influence of that general style of music.
Well, I guess
everything in both musical style and subject matter. I mean, Listening Wind.
I guess Brian Eno had turned them on to,
yeah. Oh yeah. Oh, we need
some African music that really influenced. Because when I'm listening to it, the first listen through, immediately you start to think this has a very tribal feel to it.
Yeah.
And yet he is so, for lack of a better word, Caucasian in the way he delivers things, right?
And yet, it's so true.
But keep talking. I'm sorry.
No. I mean, you're saying what I'm saying. Where it's just you feel the influence, and it feels like, in a lot of ways, you can see artists who are influenced by certain kind of worldly, like world beat or whatever, worldly influences from other countries, where they kind of take it and they fold it into their music. I don't want to say abruptly, but it sometimes feels less like they're inspired by something and more like they just take things from it. This felt way more inspired by it.
It's the basis of the album.
Yes. It feels like they took it and they folded it beautifully into like the DNA of the album itself, both in, again, music and subject matter.
If this album was a picture, the canvas would be the rhythms in the background.
Yes, 100%.
And Byron and the guitars paint the picture over the top of that.
Yes.
It's so well done.
David Byrne's such a great vocalist.
You ain't lying.
And it's funny because he just kind of yelps and moans, but it's awesome.
Right. It's not even a vocal, really.
It adds everything he needs to add into the music. Again, the emotions are so vivid.
Right. Absolutely.
I do want to say Seen and Not Seen as another one of my favorites. Just the spoken word poem and the idea it presents into this song, where he's talking about his like inner view of himself is kind of him taking different elements from popular things. And I feel like me and my generation have felt that way a lot at times, where we feel less like a cohesive person and more like, as we grew up, we just took different parts of popular things that we liked and like inserted them directly into our personality. The idea of kind of almost being a Frankenstein of popular concepts is something that is present in a lot of my generation's psyche.
Mm-hmm.
Because, like, I don't know.
It's very ahead of its time.
Yeah. Oh, yes. I mean,
this whole while speaking this whole about its time. Right.
I mean, that's the crazy thing about since the 80s, where the kind of alternative music scene has taken a turn into being about kind of feeling lost from modern society in a lot of ways.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it goes from kind of conformity in the 50s to kind of questioning that, and with certain world events being made aware of the facts, which he talks about, and I think Cross-Eyed and Painless, where he's talking about facts, they cut a hole in us, where you kind of have to deal with the absence of the way that you thought the world was, the way you thought the world operated has been cut out by facts and realizing that the world is not like that.
Right. You've been sold normality.
Yes.
Is this, but there, when you pull back the curtain and you see what's really going on, how the sausage is made, that kind of thing, it hurts, because the way you have achieved this isn't as kind and friendly and wonderful as
and he all talks that. About that
in the a, you in, being a general you not yes, you specific yes,
absolutely. And he talks about this in an abstract sense and in a literal sense in songs like Listening Wind, which is about a terrorist in, I think he was talking about North Africa, but he's talking about how colonialism affected this person, and the way that he chose to fight back against this was with violence.
Right.
But it does, to have a song that has this kind of subject matter in the 80s, kind of wild. This song would have been
the start of the 80s too.
Yeah, like the very start. Like, I don't think to make this song even today would be extremely contentious. And the way he talks about it is crazy. But I just find it to be so bold.
Absolutely.
And I find this to be way ahead of its time while still being 100% accurate to its time. The lack of trust in government, the idea that society is often a facade.
Right. Well, all of that is very punk rock.
Again, like...
But remember, they come out of CBGBs. They come out of a New York scene where there's Blondie and there's the Dead Boys and there's the Ramones. It is very punk rock.
Oh, yeah.
But the music is absolutely not.
But
you can tell that the conversations that he evolves his world view from happen in these type of places with these struggling people that are artists that are seeing the world differently than, say, a business major would.
Absolutely.
Or political theory major would, or somebody like that.
And I think that's kind of the beauty in it.
Absolutely. It's the core.
What's the next question?
You already talked about the songwriting, since that was one of the things. But do you think this album aged particularly well?
It aged about as perfectly as an album can.
Yeah.
Given the time period.
I literally, the first song, I was like, this could have been made yesterday.
It feels that way, because these issues are, unfortunately, in a lot of ways, timeless.
Absolutely.
Almost getting worse over time, so it's almost more accurate.
Right.
What would you guys rate it out of 10?
I'd probably give it a 10. Or like a... yeah, like a 9-10 range.
I'd give it a 9.
I'd give it a 9.
Right, it's really, really good.
It's really good.
The only reason why I wouldn't give it a 10 is because there are things I like better. There's nothing wrong with this record.
Totally fair.
It's great.
Totally fair.
You know what I mean?
That's the weird thing about scales like that, where it's just like, you can listen to something that is a, quote, perfect album, but you can like something else that's not, quote, perfect more.
Right, so how do I give it, how do I give what my absolute favorite is a 10?
So,
and not give something that isn't my absolute favorite.
What I'm saying,
you know,
where
here do I go from there?
Is that if this album was in the Tokyo Dome, it would have gotten 12 stars?
Correct, but it's a 9.
It's a 9.
Because it was in Tampa.
Yeah.
Okay.
Makes a difference.
Makes a difference.
The acoustics and all that.
Acoustics, yeah. Now, just a little quick thing. On the expanded, did any of you listen to the expanded version?
No.
I did not, no.
Dude, go listen to Fella's Riff when you get a chance.
Fella's Riff. I think I'm going to take a dive into their whole discography.
I like 9 and 10 on the expanded version were really...
especially good for deep cuts.
Awesome. Yeah, go check that out.
All right, what did we listen to other than that?
This week?
Just this week. Just what did we just...
I listened to Radiohead. I listened to Use Your Illusion 2 by Guns N' Roses. I listened to... when I was in the yard yesterday working, we had a playlist going that had Public Enemy and Tupac and Biggie and the Beastie Boys on it.
Yes.
I think I heard Rain When I Die, or Rooster.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. I listened to Mad Season, which is a super group out of...
Yes. Probably...
River of Deceit, one of the great songs.
Oh, yeah. That's...
I listened to a Tom Petty...
That's an underrated... That is easily top 5 super groups? Top 10?
I listened to a Tom Petty song that was a new release. I listened to the new Deftones record and the new Idols record
a second time through.
And I'm convinced the Idols are the Clash.
It is. It's a lot more old school in some ways. So I'm...
I love that record.
I'm having to adjust to it, so I haven't...
See, I'm not as big a fan as you, so it hits me differently than it does you.
Yeah, I had a lot of expectations going into it, and with stuff like this, I don't really, like, even if I listen to it once and I don't have, like, the greatest view of it, I know that's, like, often inaccurate.
Mm-hmm.
Where it ends up being, I need to learn to appreciate this album for what it is.
Well, too, listen to what they're saying.
Dude, it's... They're smart. Mean, dude, yes. I mean, this album is, like, way, way more blunt than Joy.
Yeah.
Kind of understand why the album cover is the way it is.
I understand it. I don't like it.
I mean, it literally is just like hitting you in the face like a giant pink ball.
Right.
The lyrics and subject matter are like just, again, blunt and bold. So I listened to some of that as well. I just listened to some jazz when I was doing yard work too.
Nice.
I had a really long jazz playlist that I just throw on. It's got new stuff, old stuff, Herbie Hancock, John Coltrane, Sons of Kemet.
Listen to Siamese Dream.
Yes. Oh, and
Siamese Dream. Because that's like... Do you think it's better than Melancholy? You think Siamese Dream's better than Melancholy?
Siamese Dream is his best work.
Siamese Dream, yeah, I imagine. That's probably Bill and Corgan's best creation. Siamese Dream.
Besides NWA Pro Wrestling.
It's better than NWA. Just... Okay.
I miss NWA.
I miss it, but...
It's coming back.
Yes. As for my final thing, so Neil Cicerega is a... He's many things. A comedian.
YouTuber.
YouTuber, artist. He's many things, but something he has done in the past is make these mashup albums where he combines. Mouth Moods. Yes. It's like Mouth something. Mouth Silence, Mouth Moods, Mouth. This one's Dreams. This is the fourth one. And I think this is some of his best work. And I think if you want to listen to music that's lighthearted, funny, and still exquisitely made, really well made, listen to some of that. You'll hear things that you never would have imagined. One of my favorite songs is the beat to Nine Inch Nails' Closer, with the lyrics to Fireflies by Owl City.
Mm-hmm.
It's really good.
Yeah.
Or Britney's Hit Me Baby One More Time over Beethoven.
Oh, so good.
It's kind of a bop, actually. They even have a Weezer one with Say It Ain't So over, I forget what the beat is. But again, if you're interested in stuff like that, if you listen to this album, you will just have a great time.
I'd actually recommend a different album from, technically from Neil Cicierga.
What he's going to recommend is his solo stuff, which is not mashup. It is
Lemon Demon.
Yes, it is purely his music that he's made.
Spirit Phone.
Dude, Spirit Phone by Lemon Demon, banger after banger after banger.
It's so fun.
It's again, it has the same fun while still being really well made.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, go give Lemon Demon and or Mouth Dreams a listen. You can download Mouth Dreams for free or stream it on SoundCloud. You can't get it on Spotify or whatever because it is made exclusively of copyrighted music.
Mm-hmm.
But check it out. It's fun.
I actually did end up listening to Darkness on the Edge of Town by Bruce Springsteen. Because
it's amazing, isn't it?
I might like it a little better than Born in the USA.
Yeah.
I might like it a little. It's really good.
Yes. Yeah. Gorillaz put out a new song with Elton John.
Dude, come on.
Dude, it's like, it might be one of my favorite Elton John vocal performances. It's, dude, honey smooth.
Oh.
Dude.
I think
that's great. But listen to the one with Andre 3000. It's incredible, dude. Yeah,
forget about the one I said. Throw it out the window. Go listen to that other one.
Are you talking about...
Yes, Gorillaz did something with Andre 3000. It's incredible.
No. Elton John did a hook. I don't think Andre's on it, but Elton did a hook for Tribe Called Quest on their last album. Solid Wall of Sound. They take one of his old hits and he replaces it with Solid Wall of Sound. Check that out, too. But this is... right?
Check out both of those. Check out... Because the Gorillaz have been doing great.
Yeah, they're... Gorillaz have...
Song Machine is it called?
Yeah, Song Machine. Yeah. They're so good. I say they. It's mostly just he. Damon Albarn. So good at making collaborations with people and blending them together in really unique ways. With the Elton John one in particular, there's also another artist. I don't actually know how to say his name. It's Six and then L-A-C-K, so it might be Six Lack, but I also think it's supposed to look like the word black.
Slack? Slicks? Slack?
Slacks? No, that's not now. but I think this song is really cool because... It's very melancholy in a lot of ways.
Right.
Where that's probably my favorite aspect of Gorillaz music is how melancholy it is.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. I mean, Up on Melancholy Hills, probably my favorite Gorillaz song. But it just sounds kind of vaguely sad. Right. And I think this song in particular mixes... Like, Elton John is kind of the older style of music, and he makes it very smooth and very sad in a different way than from Damon Albarn, who also sings on the song, where it's a little more updated, and the other guy, who's really talented, who kind of has that auto-crooning,
mm-hmm.
but it's still, again, melancholy in a different way, melancholy in a modern way.
Right.
I think this song's really cool.
Awesome.
Plastic Beach is...
Dude, Gorillaz is so good. Just all of it.
Incredible. And the fact that Plastic Beach isn't their best record is... just astonishing.
I don't even know if I would be able to pick my favorite Gorillaz record.
I'd probably go Demon Days. Just straight up a generic answer. Is that
a wrap? Was there a bunch more?
I mean, I could talk.
No, that was about it.
I mean, I just kind of re-listened to a couple albums. Like,
we'll talk about them.
Oh, Nirvana's Nevermind. I did listen to some Melancholy. I didn't listen to all of it because it's so freaking long. It's a double CD. Not just a double album. Double CD. When you could really pack it on.
Mm-hmm.
It's really long. It's really good. but really long. I listen to Sticky Fingers.
My guess is what got you into this is the Rolling Stones 500.
Rolling Stones Top 500.
I actually look at some records, which is probably why they put such a thing out. And he is going to be doing commentary on the Rolling Stones 500 list, and we're going to put out an episode of that soon.
By far, the favorite album I realized because of that is Darkness on the Edge of Town.
Yeah.
It's so freaking good. There's one song on there where he's screaming his brains out.
Mm-hmm.
Adam Raised a Cain. He's screaming his brains out. He's like Tom Waits, dude. It's crazy. It's insane.
I think that's probably the best thing that comes out of stuff like major publications' best of lists.
Yeah.
Is at the end of the day, if you listen to some new music that you like, that's all you can ask, you know?
And think about the name of the song. Say the name of that song again.
Adam Raised a Cain.
Adam Raised a Cain.
He did.
And he screams like Tom Waits on it. Think about it. I mean, just the description is so wonderful, right?
Oh, my God.
All right.
Dude, I love everything about that album. I think I might like it more than Born in the USA.
And there are people that say Nebraska's his best. I mean, Bruce has a...
Oh, I guess I have to put something else on my schedule.
Yeah.
It's like a...
Bruce Springsteen is one of those artists that I've never really appreciated him until, like, now.
I think that Bruce is... And I have like a weird Bruce Springsteen story, but I think that Bruce is someone who's not instantly spectacular because he's a good guitarist. He's not great. The band's very good. There's sturdy New Jersey band with a fantastic sax player, but the songs aren't, it's not Back in Black. You know what I mean? It doesn't slap you right upside the head. But as you get into it, he has Born to Run, of course, which does, but as you get into him, you start getting the nuances of what he's telling you. And the older you grow, the older you get, the more you realize what he's talking about.
I think by far the most impact he has had was when you see people playing Born in the USA in the 4th of July, and it's like, dude, like I don't know if you want to play that song on the 4th of July. And it's like, it's like that story you said about when you went to an Ozzy Osbourne concert and they played War Pigs and they showed all these dead soldiers and dead animals, and then
actual footage of the Vietnam War,
and then at the end
an American flag flies across and everybody's cheering and I'm sitting there like, wow, y'all missed the whole point of that.
Like, that was a politically motivated song.
Like, that was literally a protest song.
The song is called War Pigs.
Yes. It's not called War Angels.
Yeah, a good week in music, though.
A very good week in music. It's usually always a good week in music. 2020 has been awful, everything except for music.
There's been some good music. Absolutely. Some or revisiting old music, which is accurate to today.
I've just been revisiting mostly old music. Again, Nirvana, Radiohead, because we're doing that eventually. Mm-hmm. Someday, The Stooges. Again, Nirvana, Tom Waits, all that. But this is the end of this episode. We are going to do another one on the Rolling Stones Top 500.
Copyright 2020.
Oh, and I forgot to mention that we are doing an episode on what I believe to be one of the best rap records, period. MF Doom, Mad Villainy. Not exclusively MF Doom, it is a collaboration between MF Doom and legendary producer Madlib. It's incredible. It's very much part of an artistic splurge that MF Doom went on in like 2004 to 2005, where he just produced straight up classics. When we say listen to Mad Villainy, don't think you shouldn't listen to any more MF Doom. Alright.
That's a dude that's crazy good. In a lot of ways.
He's crazy good. Anyways, next time we'll see you. MF Doom, Mad Villainy. Copyright 2020. Go home.
Go home.